normalization of ties between Israel and Arab states, including UAE. They say that since then, those states have been continuing to reward the regime and giving up the Holy Lands. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Iran's lead nuclear negotiator in Vienna, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, says a new understanding is being reached amid attempts to revive the Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Following a joint commission session with JCPOA signatories, Russia, China, Britain, France and Germany, Araghchi said negotiators can now start working on a common draft.
Drafting can begin at least in the areas where the sides share the same views. For that purpose, the Iranian delegation has prepared its drafts both on the nuclear measures and sanction lifting, and has presented its drafts to the other parties. And we believe these texts can form the basis for negotiations and a final agreement.
Although the nuclear measures that Iran needs to take to come back to full compliance are clear, there is less clarity when it comes to the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be removed.
China maintained that all U.S. sanctions should be lifted immediately. May it concern sanctions against Iran or its long-term jurisdiction measures affecting third country entities and individuals, including those on Chinese. So, we are looking forward to such a drafting exercise.
Iran has remained steadfast in its position that it will only act after verifying the U.S.'s removal of all sanctions, including those imposed additionally or relabeled under former President Donald Trump. Although there have been no direct talks between Iran and the U.S., American delegates in Vienna have been engaged in talks with the EU coordinator and the other JCPOA signatories. Iran's lead delegate says there are still some serious differences that need to be worked out. For now, the expert working groups have been tasked with engaging in more substantive work for the next few days. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
Exchanging accusations, disagreements and the threats. This is how Turkey and Greece's relation has been going for decades, and it seems that this is how it will continue, despite the trials to solve the problems through dialogue. The two countries have always been at loggerheads due to several factors, such as history, disputes on border, politics, culture, and lately interests and power. Not to mention the refugee crisis, which added to the pile of disputes, as well as the latest maritime conflict. During a visit that is the first since the heated dispute that rose in 2020 between the two neighbors over Turkey sending a search vessel into East Mediterranean, foreign ministers of both countries exchanged accusations. The press conference started with a welcoming speech for Turkish foreign minister to holding this dialogue in hope to search solutions for the differences between Ankara and Athens. However, the Greek minister took advantage of this opportunity to criticize Turkey's actions in Eastern Mediterranean and accused Ankara of not abiding by the refugee deal made with Brussels, which forced Mevlut Çavuşoğlu to respond.
If you heavily accuse my country and people before the press, I have to be in a position to respond to that. If you want to continue our tensions, we can. If we go into mutual recriminations here, we have a lot to tell each other.
For his turn, Nikos Dendias, the Greek foreign minister, accused Turkey of not abiding by the deal made in 2016 with the EU, adding Turkey should not try to teach Greece lessons.
What's happened during the press conference after the meeting between Turkish and Greek foreign ministers was very unfortunate, but this is the actual illustration of the relation between the two. Many believe that there is no chance for reaching a solution. Today, a meeting between Cyprus, Greece, Israel and the UAE will take place. However, Egypt won't participate in this meeting. Turkey won't hesitate to respond if the outcome of this meeting wasn't up to Ankara's expectations, and I don't think the response will only be verbal.
In 2020, Turkey showed goodwill by pulling its search vessel Oruç Reis from Eastern Mediterranean in hope that dialogue between Ankara and Athens would reach a common ground. The conflict between Turkey and Greece is too profound to be solved in few meetings. Analysts believe the two must put those differences aside if they plan to reach a solution, or else the conflict will worsen. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
There is no letter to the protest to compel Pakistani government to expel French ambassador from the country. At the heart of current wave of angry protest is government's decision to shelve its 5-month-old agreement with Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, or TLP, a religious and political party, to expel the French ambassador to Islamabad. The repeated incidents of publications of blasphemous cartoons of Islam's Prophet Muhammad and official patronage of France to unending incident of blasphemy has once again triggered a mass unrest in Pakistan starting early this week. The security forces came down hard onto the protesters and managed to clear most of the highways they had occupied across Pakistan few days ago. Paris has advised all of its citizens to immediately leave Pakistan over security concern to their lives. Pakistan has restored services of major platforms on social media networks after temporarily suspending them to contain the violence. The religious group claims that over 2 dozen of its supporters were killed by security forces, while hundreds of others were injured and arrested. The government says nearly 600 of its policemen were injured and 4 of them were killed in the clashes. Pakistan has described the current wave of violence as an act of terrorism and banned the TLP.
We tried our level best through dialogue to avoid crisis from getting aggravated. However, subsequently, we found that they had a dangerous plan to cause the unrest in Pakistan. After banning the TLP, we will soon petition with the Supreme Court as part of our legal formality to get the TLP dissolved.
Pakistan's major political parties have history of attacking security forces and key state-owned buildings, some of them at far greater scale than that of TLP. The frequent incidents of blasphemy in the West has led to make TLP as one of the leading political forces in Pakistan. It is a well-entrenched and enjoys street power, and on one of the occasions late last year, it attracted millions of people in the eastern city of Lahore. Therefore, analysts believe that the government's decision to ban TLP is most likely to backfire, given the fact that TLP has extensively exploited the most sensitive public issue linked with the honor of the Prophet of Islam. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
On the occasion of Palestinian Prisoners' Day that marks April 17th of each year, Palestinian Prisoners' Committee in the Gaza Strip held a protest in front of the oldest prisoner's house, Dia al-Agha, who spent 29 years in Israeli jails. This protest aimed to express solidarity and support to all Palestinian prisoners who suffer in Israeli jails.
We hope Palestinian prisoners return home soon, and we wish there is a swap deal that can free all the Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails. They are our heroes, and we are proud of them. My only dream is just to see my son Dia again.
Nowadays, there are around 4,400 Palestinian detainees inside Israeli prisons. Most of them are suffering from different kinds of policies that aims to break the Palestinian detainees' will. The main policies practiced against them nowadays is medical negligence. This policy practiced against them since the beginning of the Israeli occupation. This policy caused more than 70 Palestinian martyrs killed through this policies inside Israeli prisons.
As part of the series of events held to mark Palestinian Prisoners' Day, the Palestinian Legislative Council held a press conference to renew the vow to set all the prisoners free from the Israeli jails and follow the steps of resistance.
Palestinians will free all prisoners who sacrificed their lives. We are following the footsteps of the prisoners, and their freedom is one of our major priorities. Israeli occupation won't see peace as long as our prisoners are suffering from the Israeli policies inside the jails.
There are some thousands of Palestinians in Israeli jails, including women and children.
On the Palestinian Prisoners' Day, people here stress that the prisoners are the symbol of the Palestinian cause and their issue is a priority, as the resistance wants it idle until all Palestinian prisoners are free. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Nearly all British troops will be withdrawn from Afghanistan following the US President Joe Biden's announcement that US forces would leave before this year's 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks.
We went to Afghanistan because of a horrific attack that happened 20 years ago. That cannot explain why we should remain there in 2021.
Of 100,000 Afghan civilians, 454 British troops, and 2,488 American troops have been killed. It cost the British taxpayer over £37 billion and the US taxpayer a whopping $2.4 trillion. It's lasted longer than both world wars combined and ranks as the US's longest ever war. But what's actually been achieved? The Taliban, which they fought so hard to oust, are poised to return to power and control most of the country. Takfiri terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda are still present, and new groups like Daesh have emerged. Moreover, Afghanistan now accounts for 93% of the world's illicit heroin supply, with heroin production reaching its record levels in 2017. We spoke to Lindsay German, who was at the forefront of the British anti-war movement and one of the leading voices making the case against the UK joining the US's war effort in 2001.
We argued back in September 2001, which, as you say, is now 20 years ago, that this war in Afghanistan would not deal with terrorism, would not solve the problems that were highlighted by 9/11, but would bring increasing misery to the people of Afghanistan.
The Speaker of the Afghan Parliament, Mir Rahman Rahmani, has warned that the withdrawal of foreign forces in the current circumstances will lead to a civil war, with many arguing the incumbent government is simply not strong enough to maintain power.
Lots of people assume that when the troops go, this will be the beginning of the end, at least for the existing government, because it very much depended on outside support in order to keep going. So, yeah, this war, I think if you want to sum it up, this is 20 years. What were those 20 years for?
Afghanistan has earned itself the nickname the Graveyard of Empires, due to the failure of empire after empire, nation after nation, to successfully occupy and pacify the people. Many will question why it took the US and the UK so long to accept the inevitable, that this was a war they simply could not win. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
For European Muslim women, wearing a niqab is no easy decision, with Islamophobic hate at epidemic levels and face covering bans coming into force. Choosing to cover up can land a woman with hefty fines, abuse, or physical harm.
With so much hostility aimed at the Islamic face veil, it is truly astonishing that any woman would continue to embrace the practice. Yet, despite these risks, many niqabis living in the West choose to continue to remain covered. This Ramadan, I decided to find out why.
We spoke to several niqabi sisters, including Zainab from Switzerland, the most recent country to ban the niqab.
For me, it's a worship service act for Allah. Nobody told me you have to wear the niqab right now. It's my free decision. It's a protection for me, and it's a free decision for my own to wear the niqab. It's a thing between me and Allah.
Critics claim the niqab holds women back, but renowned author Naima B. Robert rebuked these claims.
I think that it is really a case of the media and those behind the media need that myth of the oppressed Muslim woman in order to justify their attitudes towards Muslims in general, their hostile attitudes. It's very easy to demonize Muslims. It's very easy to enact legislation, populist legislation against Muslims, and to stoke hatred of Muslims, because hey, everyone's going to jump on board with that. All the parties will converge and agree on this. But what about the real things that are happening in those societies, whether it's unemployment, whether it's depression, all of the issues that are actually destroying their societies? Women in niqab are not that thing. Women wearing niqab in Switzerland or Holland or France are not the problem in your society. And we're not the problem with regards to any of the external threats either. We're not the terrorists. We are not the, we are not the, the sleeper cells. We're just not. That's the fact of it.
It's true that not all Muslims believe in wearing a niqab. However, the niqabis warn that once Europe has finished with them, the hijab and other Islamic principles could be the new target. Robert Carter, London.
A tribunal in Burkina Faso has decided to open a trial against Blaise Compaoré. He is accused of having organized in 1987 the putsch against Thomas Sankara and his killing. Recent interrogations revealed that France was directly involved in the putsch and maybe more. Thomas Sankara, who was called the Che Guevara of Africa, led in the 80s a popular revolution in Burkina Faso that eradicated the famine in 4 years' time and made the country self-sufficient on food production. He also called all the African leaders to suspend the debt payment to the World Bank and the IMF. Months later, he was killed. Decades after the murder of Thomas Sankara, Burkina-based judges have interrogated former members of the murder commando like Gilbert Diendéré. Journalists had access to the minutes of the report. It reveals the presence of French personnel just after the assassination.
At least 4 or 5 testimonies of Burkinabe militaries declared that French persons were present the day after the assassination in order to clean things up. That means they eliminated telephone conversations that could accuse the coup leaders. That does not mean that France was directly involved in the assassination of Thomas Sankara, but it indicates that French persons came to Burkina Faso to help Blaise Compaoré to clean things up.
Blaise Compaoré will soon become Paris's main guy in the region. The overthrow of Sankara in 1987 was not possible without the green light of Ivory Coast and the explicit support of Paris, in particular of Jacques Chirac, who was then prime minister. Chirac really disliked Thomas Sankara. Was France also complicit in the killing of Thomas Sankara? To answer that question, all the classified archives have to be opened.
The full opening of archives would allow to clarify the exact conditions of the putsch against Thomas Sankara. The judges in Burkina Faso were very surprised that no documents sent from France had the stamp classified military secret or top secret.
In 2017, French President Macron promised in Burkina Faso to declassify all the archives concerning the assassination of Thomas Sankara, but only diplomatic and other public documents have been sent. Experts suspect that French military might prevent the opening of all the archives because that could reveal the truth about Operation Barkhane. France is more and more criticized in Mali, and the anti-French sentiment in Burkina Faso is also growing. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی. مسافرین گرامی، خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Morning, Mom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O patron of beneficence.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Another minority being killed in the U.S. by police, unfortunately, is a normal headline in that country. Black Americans are 3.2 times more likely to get killed by police. And according to the New York Times, since March the 29th, at least 64 people have died at the hands of law enforcement nationwide, with Black and Latinos representing more than half of the dead. As of Saturday, the average was more than three killings per day. What is going on in the United States?
An analysis of gun violence from various databases shows police killings of individuals keep rising in the U.S., with the majority of victims being minorities. According to the analysis published by the New York Times, at least 64 people have died at the hands of law enforcement nationwide since March 29th. It also shows that Black and Latino people represent more than half of those killed, with an average over three victims a day. Analysts believe the U.S. justice system is gripped by a systematic crisis.
There is a systemic crisis in the U.S. in general for justice because you can see clearly just within the police brutality against Black people, but also against working class white folk as well. Let's not forget that.
The U.S. has been the scene of protests in the past week over the killing of 20-year-old African-American Donte Wright in Minnesota. The unarmed man was killed on April 11th after a white police officer attempted to take him into custody for traffic violation. Anger boiled further following the release of a body cam video showing police fatally shooting a 13-year-old Hispanic boy.
Please stop! Stop like now! Hey, show me your f***ing hands! Stop it! Stop it! Shot fired! Get an ambulance up here now!
Adam Toledo was shot in the chest by a police officer in Chicago on March 29th. Analysts believe the police's killing of minorities has become an epidemic in the U.S.
I think that what we're seeing with the death of Donte Wright in Minneapolis and all the many deaths that have taken place in the last year, the last 5 years, 10 years, roughly 1,000 every year of police killings of Black and brown men, mostly men, is an epidemic, and it's become absolutely, it's intolerable, and the police are out of control.
Anti-racism sentiments were already high in the U.S. over the trial of a former Minneapolis police officer charged with the murder of African-American George Floyd. The trial began on March 30th and is ongoing. Floyd's death at the hands of a white officer last May raised calls for police reforms in the U.S. Racial discrimination and injustice against minorities there has long been a major concern. Prominent rights group Human Rights Watch recently warned that American authorities should take bold steps to address the structural racism in the police. Many have warned that the failure to tackle race issues will further ignite tensions and increase inequality in America.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, Dr. Gail Frazier, author, lecturer, and social entrepreneur out of Chicago, and Wyatt Reed, correspondent out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. I'm going to start it off in D.C., and Wyatt. Wyatt, what exactly is going on? I mean, we're seeing this, of course, it never really came to an end, but last year, after the demonstration with George Floyd, things died down a bit as far as protests. Again, now we're seeing, basically, we're practically hearing about another minority being killed by police almost on a daily basis. Give me your take as far as what's going on over there, and from a journalist's perspective, what's being said.
Well, that's right. I think what's being right now is a natural consequence of the fact that last summer, when hundreds of thousands, millions actually, came out to protest racist police terror in the United States. Arguably the largest protests that have ever taken place in the U.S. In terms of just the total participation. Nothing really fundamentally changed. You know, we forget that, Trump is out of office now. I think there's this tendency among certain more liberal sort of segments to think, well, you know, Biden is in office, things are going to get better. And what we're seeing right now is effectively, it doesn't matter if it's Trump or Biden in the White House, the extrajudicial police killings continue unabated, and have, if anything, in the past week, seemed to really accelerate. So that's why you're seeing protests all over the country in cities like Sacramento, especially in Chicago, where Adam Toledo, the 13-year-old boy, was killed by. And in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, where Dante Wright was killed by police just weeks ago, over $346 in unpaid fines. So, you know, what we're seeing here in D.C. Is a similar dynamic, effectively this lingering sort of police brutality that was never really in any way addressed is now manifesting itself. So last night we saw officers bull rush demonstrators outside the Chinatown Arch in Washington, D.C. around 11:30 as the demonstrators were attempting to disperse. Cops moved in extremely aggressively, shoving protesters to the ground, hurling a woman to the ground, beating on protesters with batons.
Okay.
Extremely aggressive, violent tactics. And we're seeing that play out in other cities, in Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis,
Stay with me. Let me get Dr. Frazier in on this discussion. Dr. Frazier, why are American cops so aggressive? I mean, in many other countries, police try to de-escalate a situation, but in the U.S., it's not rare that a person who's been stopped for a minor traffic violation could end up being violently arrested or killed, especially if that person is a minority and especially Black American.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, and I want to say that it's actually in the core of the policing within this country. I appreciate your asking me to be on. We have to understand how this police state evolved. And of course, we know for us as Black people, it's evolved since inception, since we've been here in this United States as the police officers being slave catchers. So as a result of that, that is in the very core of the Gestapo state, because what the individuals and for more or less, they are on this, they have this mindset to shoot to kill. And I think about the mayor that we used to have years ago named Mayor Richard Daley when Dr. King was assassinated. Those were his words. He said, shoot to kill. So that's the way they've been trained. And because of people, you know, Blacks in particular, because the vitriol and the hatred towards Blacks are so escalated within this country that their lives mean nothing. Black lives mean nothing to those who are in power, as well as those who are on the police force. And of course, I'm grateful for the ones who are decent, but there are far too many who are rogue, who have been able to shroud underneath the cloth of being here to protect and serve. Some of them, I would venture to say are on the police force because they wanted to have the opportunity to kill some Blacks. And because of the fears that they now have had, because people are rising up against this oppression, now different things are happening, and so you see so many individuals are getting wantonly killed on a regular basis.
Now, Dr. Frazier, staying with you, it's been 30 years since Rodney King, and that happened in the Los Angeles of the courts. That was one of the first videos probably that was out and showing police abusing a Black man in that way. What has changed in the United States since Rodney King, 1991, and now we're talking about 2021?
I hate to say that nothing's changed. As a matter of fact, in some cases, rather grew worse. And because of the fact that it's not being judged, it's not being judged from those who are in high positions. They give lip service, I'll just do as an aside, you know, when we had the situation where some of the Asians had been jumped on because of the so-called COVID and all of that, of course, the president and the vice president scurried to make sure that they went down to Texas or wherever the situation transpired to comfort and executive orders being issued. However, as it pertains to black people, there has not been an executive order against violence relative to black people. So it's quite obvious that we are not on their agenda. That's the reason why you see so many individuals rising up and contending with those powers, because we know that it's wicked and it's unjust. And so this is what we're seeing. It's in many cases, as I said previously, it has not gotten better, but rather it's grown worse.
Well, Wyatt, I've seen many situations that, as a black American, it's quite unbelievable when a white person has been aggressive with police, and yet police wouldn't even draw their guns. I mean, what do you make of this?
Well, that's right. A lot of people are pointing out the obvious, where was all this energy on January 6th? Where was all of this when the president incited a riot at the Capitol attempting to essentially prevent the replacement from coming to power? The police handled them with kid gloves. There were very few arrests relative to the numbers at the time, and indeed, footage was released showing cops holding some of the rioters' hands and guiding them into the building, opening doors for them, inviting them in. So I think there is, you know, a lot to be said about that dynamic, and I think it's a natural outgrowth of, as the guest was stating, sort of the history of the United States as a settler colony, as a society which grants rights and privileges based on race and based on this sort of totem pole of racialization, which it invented specifically to exploit black labor, exploit black people, and you know, on territory which was itself stolen from the native population. All of this goes really to the core, I think, of the police killing issue in the United States, and racial justice issues more broadly.
Dr. Frazier, as a race, do you think black Americans suffer from PTSD? I mean, is there added stress on black Americans just living in the United States?
Oh, wow. That's an understatement. Sustained trauma since we've been here. And unfortunately, we are not classified as a people for having suffered PTSD. People pass over that quite often. As a matter of fact, we're not recognized as far as any particulars relative to health, mental health related things and services that's needed. PTSD is extreme in our communities, and the mental health disorders and challenges that have gone undetected, all of the various things that now physically are playing out in individuals' bodies, whether it be genetic disorders and diseases that have come from the sustained and pervasive and perpetual intimidation and all types of things that you can experience or imagine that can be done to a human being. And so, yes, PTSD is very extreme, and our young people in particular are going through PTSD exponentially because they don't see themselves being protected and they don't see others caring about them. And so as a result, you see the escalation of violence and all of these things that people, and I would have to say white supremacists and those who are like them, want to negate and say that this is just something that we need to just get over. But the reality is, it's not something that's just going to disappear until it's addressed here in this country.
Well, Dr. Frazier, staying with you, I was just reading something today, actually, and it was talking about professional black individuals and saying that we should not think that this is something that's affecting a certain age group or certain sex in black American, that people who are extremely successful, they'll have that added pressure of being a black American, having to be better than the rest, also having to be an example for their own race. I want to talk about that side of things when we're talking about pressure in general that's on black people in that society.
Well, you know, the truth is, what you said is absolutely right, Sister Marzia. The bottom line is that all of us, no one is exempted from this. As a matter of fact, we, and when I say we, I'm saying myself along with others who have been pushing legislation to proclaim health violence as a health care crisis, in particular for Black people. And so in the state of Illinois, which was it was pushed by Pastor Anthony Williams and those of us who supported that, is still sitting on the governor's desk. Now, of course, we know that PTSD impacts all of us. There is no Black person that's exempted from PTSD. However, I will say we do have resilience. And as a result of the resilience, we have overcome in so many areas because of the resilience. But that in no wise negates the fact that Black people in general are impacted by PTSD. And then to add to that, how other people benefit from this particular state that we are in relative to PTSD. They benefit from this. And so as a result, we have to endure many things. And as you well know, we have had to and continue. So yes, whether it be a Black physician, a bus driver, you name it, we are impacted by PTSD. And it is an extreme situation, here in this country. So definitely, I wholeheartedly agree with what you just said. It is absolutely correct.
Well, Wyatt, we've seen decades and decades of police brutality in the United States, and we've seen protests, people taking to the streets. And what has happened? I mean, we've been looking at this for forever. So what has happened that still we see the same things are taking place? I mean, people have protested and demanded a change, and yet this continues to happen.
Well, what we've seen is continuation of policies that are bipartisan, which is the response to any protest against the police is essentially to give more money to the police, to things they call training. You know, it doesn't seem to be working, right? To me, it's reminiscent of kind of a longstanding pattern among a lot of police apologists who have said, essentially, you know, we just need one more little reform, and then all of a sudden this system will no longer kill Black people almost on a daily basis. And so we saw, you know, in the aftermath of Mike Brown, you know, in the mid 2014-2015, we saw a lot of to-do about, you know, body cameras. Everyone was saying, well, you know, if the officer had been wearing a body camera, then, you know, we would know what happened. We had body cameras started out, police departments all across the country. And we've seen a shift into, you know, well, maybe cops should be equipped with tasers so they have less lethal options, as they like to refer to them. Well, that doesn't seem to be solving. And there have been over a dozen cases where cops have pulled out their gun, claiming that they were reaching for the taser, and shot and killed somebody. So, you know, I think really what has changed is very little. And this is why you continue to hear protesters calling to defund the police, because as the previous guest was stating, all of the, there is a massive levels of PTSD, especially in Black communities, in colonized and racialized communities, in working communities more generally. And, you know, part of the reason is all the money goes to the police. The protesters are calling to defund police, put money into mental health, social services, schools, transportation, education, all of the things that prevent violence, you know, in a much more meaningful way than the police.
Okay. Well, Dr. Frazier, if this is the result of systemic racism, does it mean basically that the system has to change, that that's the only way that this is going to be eradicated, that the changes cannot come from within the same system?
But as a matter of fact, the whole system has to be reconstructed altogether. As a matter of fact, there are a group of individuals that, you know, we of course work with. They're talking about we're talking about setting up our own place, our own space, so that we can live in peace. If I can say about the police, we have to keep in mind that the police, that whole section had been structured to incite fear in the hearts of Black people. So now we know from slavery even to this point that they're still trying to incite fear. And then, of course, with the gun, so-called gun control, where they say turn in your weapons and all of those things, they're telling individuals to turn in their weapons, but they still have theirs, okay? And wisdom would say is that would you turn in your weapons if you got to take care of your family if some wild vigilante or rogue cop or whoever that is coming to destroy your family? So we have some very deep-seated things here, and it's not just going to disappear. And those people who are supposed to be of goodwill, they are never going to say anything that's going to apparently upheave anything that they believe is going to impact their families. So when we talk about this whole thing, the structure is altogether messed up. The structure has always been messed up, and we understand as Black people that it has never been, the structure has never been set up for us. We're not a part of the structure. This is the reason why you have all of the white supremacists and all of the different ones, the white church and all of the different ones still holding on to some demonic mindset that we're supposed to be in subjection.
So let me just really quickly. So are you saying then that the key, I just want to understand what you're saying. Are you saying basically the key in your perspective is separation? Black Americans separating from
the United States. That is definitely what we've been having that on the table for a good while. We have the reparations movement, but then we also have the separation with the Afro-descendant nation and all of that. They're saying, hey, we got to separate from these people because obviously it's not in their will to do what's righteous. And so we have many things on the table now that we're trying to address on so many different levels.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Frazier. Hopefully we'll talk another time in more detail. Appreciate you being with us. Dr. Gail Frazier, author, lecturer, and social entrepreneur. Out of Chicago, Wyatt Reed, correspondent out of Washington, D.C. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
An Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Iran is the land of poetry and literature. Great renowned poets lived in this vast land, which among them mention can be made of Maulana, Saadi, Hafez, and Khayyam. One of the great Iranian poets is Baba Taher Oryan. Today, I'm going to travel to the old city of Hamedan in order to visit the tomb of this great Iranian poet. The tomb of Baba Taher is located in the city of Hamedan, in a square with the same name in Baba Taher Square. Baba Taher, who lived in late 4th century AH and early 5th century AH, is one of the great poets and mystics of Iran. He is the master of couplet composing poets of Iran. The tomb of Baba Taher is located in the city of Hamedan in the center of a green, beautiful, rectangular square. This tomb has a prism-shaped dome, which is turquoise in color. The tower of the tomb is located on an octagonal base. The old tomb of Baba Taher dates back to the Seljuqid era. The new tomb was renovated in 1965. I am now in the ancient, beautiful city of Hamedan. The magnificent Tower of Baba Taher is across from me. I really can't wait to see the inner part of this beautiful tomb. Well, the facade of the structure which houses the tomb is made of stone. These beautiful stones have been taken from the mountains around Hamedan and have been used for building this tomb. Around me, there is a green beautiful area which I can't take my eyes off it. The building of the tomb is located on a hill. Let's go inside the building. Oh my God! Magnificent! Amazing! Extraordinary! I am now inside the area of the Baba Taher tomb. Around me there are marble-made inscriptions. 24 pieces of marble which have Baba Taher couplets written on them with beautiful Farsi language and calligraphy. These couplets are very emotional and fill one with serenity and calm. One of these inscriptions reads, "Love to be sweet must be reciprocal. Love unrequited makes sick the heart." The area around the tomb is so beautiful. This area is filled with colorful, fragrant flowers. People of the heart usually visit this tomb and recite the poems of this great poet.
من از حال و بلا تشویش دارم، گناه از برگ و بارون بیش دارم. اگر لا تقنه تو دستم نگیره، من از یا ویلنا
Let me walk in this beautiful area. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good morning!
Iran, IRIB English Radio.